Hello and welcome to Contemplations. I am Josh and I am joined by Bo.
How you doing?
Not too bad, how are you?
Yeah, not too bad, thank you.
So what we're going to be talking about today is ideas around altruism and selfishness, because I think it's really important to address these kind of areas because there are lots of widespread misconceptions about what they are, what the terms mean, and how to identify them in the world. And this is one of those topics that is quite good because I actually have definitive resolutions about this discrepancy, whereas most of the time things are almost too complex to say, you know, this is definitely what the case is, whereas in this case, we kind of know enough to know how altruism works, what selfishness is. And I'm also going to talk about the term selfishness because, of course, it's a bit of a loaded term, so what I'm going to do is talk about some definitions before I actually get started, which I know is a bit tedious. I think you probably already know what the terms mean, but it's important to make sure we nail it down as much as possible because a lot of these things are very defined by their linguistic character, and I want to make sure that when I'm talking about something, I'm very specific about what I'm actually addressing. So the first things first. Obviously, you're familiar with the idea of altruism and selfishness, and I imagine that it'll be pretty easy to come up with your own kind of informal definition. So I imagine you'd probably say altruism, you know, is, I don't know, giving someone some money with no expectation of getting something in return, whereas selfishness would be, I don't know, taking money without giving them anything in return.
I always think of, you can correct me on this, of course, I always think of altruism as something very, very similar to, almost identical to the idea of sort of selflessness.
Mm-hmm.
That there's sort of, correct me if I'm wrong, I may well be wrong, but part of the definition of altruism would be that you personally gain nothing from it. Is that a big part of it?
Or I think so, yeah, because of course, if you have selfishness, that's kind of one end of the spectrum where you're purely self-serving. And then on the other kind of end of the spectrum, the other extreme, you've got, you know, purely selfless, like not caring for themselves whatsoever, that sort of thing, and caring for other people.
Because, of course, I guess this must all be on some kind of spectrum, right? Because you talk about being selfish, and there's one thing to sort of steal the last biscuit, and there's another thing to be sort of a rapist murderer.
Mm-hmm.
Out of selfishness, right? I mean, I guess there's all different pathologies going on there on those very extreme ends. But could you not say that people that are, well, if you're suffering from psychopathy or something like that, it's a bit beyond just being selfish, isn't it?
Yeah, it would be
a bit
unusual
of being anything other than selfish. I don't know.
I mean, when people talk about, say, like a murderer, the first thing is, you know, the worst part, they're selfish. You know, it's as far as their other crimes go, that's pretty, you know, acceptable compared to, you know, the killing part. But
there is, I've watched quite a few videos where it's really, really bad criminals getting sentenced. You know, the catharsis that comes with watching someone,
a
monster, get six life sentences or something.
Mm-hmm.
And they're always extremely, extremely, extremely selfish. They only care about themselves and not their victims at all. Mm-hmm. But as I say, it's sort of beyond selfish, it's something far, far beyond that, although it is also selfish.
I think selfishness might be a prerequisite for what they're doing. You've already got to be predisposed to that to be able to do those sorts of things. But what I'm actually going to be focusing on mainly here is altruism, because I think a lot of people understand selfishness, self-interest. I would describe it as kind of the default mode of being of human beings, is being self-interested, because, I mean, we're animals like any other, well, we are obviously distinct, but we are still animals. We're still a product of how we evolved, and we still have relics of our past. And of course, all other non-human animals, it's understood that they are motivated by the same self-interest that we find in ourselves, probably to a greater extent than we probably find in ourselves, because of course we have consciousness, we have empathy, and things that muddy the water a bit about self-interest. And there are lots of interesting ways in which this can be broken down and understood. And I think in looking at the altruism side of things, we also understand what it truly means to be selfish, which is what I'm going to look at. But before I carry on with this, I'm going to just go through some definitions. So I'm using the American Psychological Association's definitions, and I'm not a fan of them. They're pretty awful, to be honest. I mean, most of the APA's work now is just subverting actual science, but alas, their definitions are all right. So before I get comments telling me off for using them, I've made sure the definitions are good. So they define altruism as an apparently unselfish behavior that provides benefit to others at some cost to the individual. In humans, it covers a wide range of behaviors, including volunteerism, martyrdom, but the degree of which such behaviors are legitimately without egoistic motivation is subject to debate. In animal behavior, it is difficult to understand how altruism could evolve in a species since natural selection operates on individuals. However, organisms displaying altruism can benefit if they help their relatives, see kin selection, or if an altruist act in a subsequently reciprocal altruistic way. So it's quite an expansive definition there. They've brought in a lot of things, which I'm going to touch on later, but what they're trying to frame here is, okay, we're not going to pick a side on this debate, whether it's actually a real thing, but this is what one side say, but also here is the discrepancy. And that's all kind of tied in neatly with the definition. I thought this is quite useful because it's almost like a litmus test for the kind of nature of the ongoing debate at the minute, because this is certainly something that is still not settled necessarily. There are still people taking the sides of people are purely selfish, people are purely altruistic and things in between. But I feel like there is enough evidence to come to a reasonably sound conclusion about things, which I shall get onto. But the definition of selfishness is simply the tendency to act excessively or solely in a manner that benefits oneself, even if others are disadvantaged. So that's more or less what you said. And what I have also included here is a definition of self-interest, which is something that I want to separate from selfishness, because I think... So self-interest, they define as one's personal advantage or benefit. Self-interested behavior includes both the pursuit of rewards and benefits and the avoidance of costs, dangers, and harm. So one is just purely focusing on your interests for yourself. Mm-hmm. Whereas one is putting your interest for yourself above the well-being of others, I suppose. So making the distinction between the two is important. And a lot of the things that people might call selfishness quite often is actually self-interest. Because if you say, I don't know, going to the shops and buying yourself food, I mean, you could describe it as being selfish because you're only looking out for your own needs. You're not giving, you know, food out to the homeless on your way there. You're going and doing something purely for yourself. But is it selfish or is it self-interested? I would say that's probably self-interested because you're not necessarily depriving anyone of anything unless you're being really pedantic about it. Like, you could have given that money to someone else. Well,
is there like a moral aspect to this as well? Because I suppose you could have sort of a morally correct self-interest, mm-hmm, and not morally.
Think that's the distinction to make, really, right, the morality of it.
So it's okay to provide food for yourself. Mm-hmm. There's nothing sort of morally or ethically wrong with that.
I think it's something that seems strange to people to say, but you have a duty of care to look after yourself. You are a human being as well.
Right.
You are allowed to look after your own interests, and that is fine. Just if you're looking at it from the moral lens, you don't disadvantage anyone else. And I think that's something that I am sympathetic towards and agree with. I mean, I try and follow that, although we'll get on to why perhaps it might be a fool's errand, maybe.
Okay.
But we shall see. But what I want to hammer home before I get into the nitty-gritty is that it's not as simple as altruism good and selfishness bad, or self-interest bad. I mean, selfishness and self-interest can be used kind of interchangeably, but obviously when someone is doing something at the expense of someone else, it's purely selfishness. So there are obviously limitations to strict adherence to either one. If you're purely altruistic, you'll probably end up destitute because there's always someone worse off than you. So you could, if you were purely operating under altruistic principles, then you would give away all your possessions to people who are more needy than you, and then you yourself would be basically a vagrant with no clothes on your back because there's always someone better off. So if you follow that, that's pretty obvious how it's going to lead. If you're purely motivated only by altruism, there's no limiting principle there, you're going to neglect yourself at the expense of everyone else, which is not desirable, obviously.
Isn't there traditions of people being aesthetes or the Jainist monks, mm-hmm. spring to mind perhaps, or any sort of monastic life where you deliberately have no possessions or beyond one mm-hmm. pair of shoes and a robe or something, but and you know, you deliberately cultivate not mm-hmm. hurting anyone or anything, or not taking anything from sort of the environment, etc. as much as you possibly can.
It's not done exclusively in the name of altruism though, is it? Because there's a certain amount of I'm doing this to become closer to God or to spiritual enlightenment. So they're still doing it in the pursuit of a self-interested aim. Obviously it's not selfish because they're giving up all their possessions, but there's still some element of self-interest there because they're looking to further themselves through their altruistic acts.
I suppose we'll get onto it, but it's all like charity as well. Mm-hmm. Giving of any charity, is it sort of an altruistic, sort of unself-interested thing? Or is it, in fact, mm-hmm. entirely selfish because it makes you feel good about yourself?
Well, there are two different perspectives on that, yeah. But, I mean, it depends on the individual and the circumstances quite a lot. I know that's the cop-out answer, but I'll get onto the more specifics later. But, of course... On the other hand, of course you can have someone who's purely altruistic, but this is very rare to happen because I think people are predisposed to being self-interested. But then if you're self-interested to a fault or therefore selfish, then this isn't desirable either because you're going to push people away from your life and it's going to make it more difficult because no one is going to want to be around someone who's purely out for themselves. You've got to have some kind of reciprocity there, otherwise you're going to be, you know, on your own in life, in a world where you're very dependent on other people in the civilization. Right. So that's not desirable either. So you've got to find some kind of balance between both selfishness and altruism. And there is clearly a balance there to be had because you can't pursue either of these extremes. And that to me seems self-evident. I don't think that's particularly controversial statement that if you pursue either purely altruism or purely self-interest or selfishness, then you're not going to do any good for the world or yourself. I wanted
to know the definitions of what true pure altruism would be, but I'll let you get to it. Sorry, huh?
It'd probably be self-sabotage. Like if someone was purely altruistic to, and they lead themselves to destitution, then I mean, a psychologist might sit them down and be like, well, what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
It's to that level, right. I would say. Right. Okay. I mean, the fact it is very, very rare kind of says it all, really. Okay. So there are two different understandings of altruism or just human behaviour dealing with other people, I suppose, and not just altruism, but also self-interest. It's the altruistic view and the egoistic view. So I'm going to touch on the altruistic view first, because I think it's the one that is a little bit more complicated, but not by much. It's basically the view that people behave altruistically out of genuine concern for another's well-being. So these theories are basically talking about the motivation behind people's behaviour. So they suggest more or less that we feel empathy, these emotions that we feel inside of us motivate our subsequent behaviour, and this is something that is authentic and genuine. And I mean, I know that empathy does certainly motivate people's behaviour. I mean, people act towards other people they don't know in ways that are empathetic and in the other person's interest, even though they themselves get nothing out of it. And we know that this happens. So this isn't something that you can say, well, this doesn't exist, because it certainly does. Even though I'm relatively cynical, I wouldn't deny it to that extent. So I wanted to touch on some of this, some of the research into altruism, and I've linked down below where I'm getting this from. So this is talking about some research where it says Observing another person's action, pain, or affect can trigger parts of the same neural networks responsible for executing those actions and experiencing those feelings firsthand. So what it's saying here is that in your brain, the same systems that deal with your own emotions, if you look at someone else experiencing something, those same systems trigger in a comparable way to if you yourself are experiencing it firsthand. So this is very promising for people who believe in true altruism, because it's suggesting that the neurology is set up in a way that, you know, your empathetic reactions are not limited by the fact you're witnessing someone else, because the same systems are evoked, perhaps in different ways, but you're still using the same underlying neural pathways, and therefore, at a biological level, there's no reason why you can't feel genuine empathy towards someone else and understand their situation in a way that is comparable to yourself, which I think is a nice and kind of consoling thing. So, I mean, that kind of goes against the egoistic view that you're purely self-serving, but I'll touch on that in a second. So,
can we get an example, though? What are we talking about exactly? So say, say you see a destitute homeless person on the street,
mm-hmm.
and it's bitterly cold, and they're
same pathways activating in your own brain, dealing with, say, the cold and feeling like you're, you know, on your own, no one's out looking out for you, feeling a bit down in the dumps, a bit cold. You know, all of these different pathways that are involved in these different processes will be activating when you see that person, assuming you're a functional person. I mean, if you're a psychopath, this isn't going to happen.
But,
but these same things are going to trigger. And of course, there's a metacognitive element as well, because I know I'm certainly guilty of this when there's someone like lying on the floor with a blanket. Normally my inclination is I'm going to kind of steer myself away because they might hassle me for money. And I mean, that's probably an extreme example of self-interest or selfishness, however you want to put it.
Yeah.
But
no, because there's also the idea, Tacitus mentions it at one point, and mm-hmm. it rings true with me that sometimes when people, it's really harsh, it's a really harsh reality, but I think it is a real psychological thing, that when people are kind of pathetic or sort of, that some people empathize with it and sort of the neurons go off in their brain to empathize with it.
Mm-hmm.
Some people feel contempt for them.
Yeah.
The fact that they've failed in life to provide for themselves is contemptible.
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily think that, by the way. I just want to make that clear. But there is that's certainly there, right?
It's not...
So in different people, different mm-hmm. neurological paths or different psychologies will play out.
That's what I was trying to touch on,
okay.
in a way.
Right,
because
okay.
your decision to kind of empathize with someone kind of has to be at least somewhat consciously directed, because sure, you have the unconscious capacity to empathize with someone. You do it without thinking, don't you? But at the same time, you've got to recognize the cues. So for example, in this example by Tacitus, there's someone really pathetic, and the person who notices these traits consciously and is just like, oh, I feel a bit bad for them. They must have had something bad happen in the past for them to be this way, that sort of thing. They're empathizing at one kind of cognitive level, but then at the person who's looking at them with scorn, that's almost like a different form of empathy, because at the same time, it's not necessarily being purely self-interested. Sure, they might feel good about themselves for, you know, I've got myself together and they don't. But also they must be thinking, well, that person has a duty to uphold certain standards and they've failed on that. And they feel empathy perhaps for the people around that person's life whom they're negatively affecting by the way in which they're carrying themselves. Because it's not a purely, otherwise it wouldn't be a morally contemptible thing to be pathetic, because there would be no consequences. So they're two different kind of approaches to empathy and understanding and altruism there that are kind of on show, that are being kind of directed by your conscious thought, because it's not strictly an unconscious thing, is it? Because what they're thinking directly and explicitly in their own head is shaping how they're looking at the situation and basically what they're feeling, their emotional reaction to it. And it's more of a top-down thing than a bottom-up process, really.
Okay. Interesting.
But to move to examples from non-human animals, to suggest that our capacity to behave altruistically and to empathise, I'm going to read out a quote here. So, work with rats has found that these animals are more likely to freeze after watching another rat receive an electric shock if they themselves had been shocked in the past.
Do you mean just freeze in movement, not freeze cold?
Yeah, right. So they would stop as if they were anticipating itself, the shock itself, when they saw another rat being shocked. Like they had an understanding that that rat is another entity like me, and they're experiencing something unpleasant that I've experienced before, and therefore they've reacted to that. So there must be at least some amount of understanding there. Between the rats, and if it's present in rats, we can only assume that it's even more so in human beings. I mean, being the social animals that we are. And I'm going to read another quote from this study here, saying inhibiting a region analogous to the ACC, which is the anterior cingulate cortex, but that's not important, in rats' brains reduced their responses to another rat's distress, but not their fear of being shocked themselves, suggesting that the area deals specifically with socially triggered fear. Notice they're saying fear, which is a very specific word implying that you're fearing for your own safety, right? So this kind of makes things a bit more complicated, because it's saying, sure, there's this region in the brain that deals with looking at another entity's distress, but also there's the fact that it's dealing with fearing shocking themselves as well. So how do you tie altruism into this? Sure, it's showing that it's a deep-seated and intuitive response, but is this purely altruistic? I wouldn't say it is, because there's a certain amount of self-interest here where they're noticing that this other rat is being shocked, but they're also having this fear response in themselves at the prospect of potentially them themselves being shocked as well, because of course it makes sense that if you're seeing another organism suffer some kind of mistreatment, then you're going to be more likely to expect that upon yourself as well. So it makes sense from an evolutionary perspective why the rat would, I suppose, think in that way. I mean, say, is it thinking really? Does it have a deep mental life? But that's an aside.
So, for example, I think maybe we've talked before once about how dogs, obviously it's a slightly higher mammal than a rat, isn't it? I think it's fair to say they're sort of more intelligent. But still, dogs aren't massively intelligent compared to sort of higher primates or anything, or apes or anything. And yet they quite clearly feel guilt and happiness and pain, and they dream and all sorts of emotions, actually. All sorts of emotions. They get jealous and things, don't they? Quite developed emotions, really. And that's just a dog. So if stuff like that happens even in rats, you know, I don't know if we could say the same about if it happens in reptiles or insects or anything, but even in very small mammals, it's interesting, is it, that even a rat's mind is capable of that sort of thing.
I mean, rats aren't really particularly stupid mammals. I mean, as far as small mammals go.
You say they aren't.
Yeah, as in small mammals go, they're pretty intelligent relative to their brain size, although obviously size doesn't necessarily correlate with intelligence, because then a blue whale would be more intelligent than a person. But there's obviously something going on here, and I think my kind of working theory is, obviously we don't know for certain, is that it's to do with dependence on the social group. So in a dog, obviously, they would hunt in a pack like a wolf. They've still got those wolf instincts in them, because that's the animal that they were bred from. And they have this rather large dependence on the group. And I think rats, although they're still somewhat social, they're less dependent on other organisms. They don't coordinate to hunt, for example, like a dog or a wolf might. So they need to be more socially conscious, and that ties into their self-interest in a way, because their success as a group is dependent on the well-being of other organisms, other entities other than themselves in that group. And I mean, if they acted purely out of self-interest, it might mean that in the short term they might do better than the others, but in the long term they're not going to be able to sustain the relationship, and then their quality of life will plummet as a result. But we'll get onto that in a second.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.